David here. I thought for today's podcast I'd do a little bit of reflecting and reminiscing and a panegyric about three late lamented London Walks guides, the three J's, June, Jean, and Joan. Now, the reflecting triggered by a couple of things that Keith Baverstock, the founder of London Walks, points that he's made in these first three or four episodes, his own reminiscing, his history of the early days of London Walks. In the most recent one, he mentioned the Good Loo tours that they were doing. And he was amused, as I was, when he recalled that in those days, this is back in the 1960s, if you were caught short in Parliament Square, you could just go up to the policeman and say, would it be all right if I go inside there, the Houses of Parliament, to use the loo? And you could do this then. Well, that got me thinking. I mean, generally, in the 50 years that I've been here, this is what we've seen. Things just get tighter and tighter and tighter. More and more gets off limits, both for the tourist, but also for the serious stroller, the flaneur. Famously, in the old days, Downing Street, number 10 Downing Street, you could actually go and stand on the step and have your photograph taken with the single bobby, the policeman there. And then they stopped that. They moved you. You could still stand on the other side of the street and look over the way. And then they put a stop to that, and you couldn't go into Downing Street at all. They gated it. But in those days, if you knew what you were doing, you could kind of sneak around to the western end of Downing Street, and you could get quite close there. There was a gate that you could look through. Not a lot of people knew about it, so it was fun to get there. But then, of course, they put a stop to that as well. Another example is St. James's Palace. That used to be just so accessible. You could get really close. You could go into Ambassador's Court. You could wander around back in there. You could peek through the windows. And, of course, all of that now has been sealed off. It just does not happen anymore. Second point that Keith made, again, this mention of the Good Loo tour. You know, nothing new under the sun, really. Last summer, somebody started a Good Loo tour, and I came across her at the start of it, and she was proudly proclaiming that this was something that was completely new. Nobody had ever done it before, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I really had to bite my tongue. You know, I was really tempted to say, no, sorry, darling. Wouldn't have said darling, but so terribly sorry. But London Walks was doing these 50 years ago. But, you know, there you are. There you are. And the third point that's jumped out at me, and this came as a real surprise to me, the very first London Walks were pub crawls. This is from the horse's mouth. This is from Keith himself. I hadn't known that. For years, I've been telling Australians on my walks, with a good deal of pleasure, I've mentioned this to them, that London Walks was started by an Australian, and then I'd like to add, and I'd say, and in some ways even better, the pub walks were started by an Australian woman. It's a gal named Joan, and Joan I did know. I never got to meet Keith. Our paths didn't cross. He'd gone back to Australia a year or two before I got to London in the early 70s. But I did, when I joined as a guide in 1980, Joan was still on board, and I did get to know her. And I'd heard from, I think it was Graham, one of the long-standing guides, that it was Joan who had started the pub walks. I can remember Graham telling me that she had pestered and pleaded with Ian, who at the time was the boss, he owned London Walks, to let him or let her do a pub walk. And Ian didn't want to do pub walks, didn't want her to do one, but she just didn't give up. And yeah, she really pestered him. And eventually he caved in and she did one. And then he was won over, according to the story, because she rang him that first night from the first pub, said, "Ian, send another guide. There's 65 people on this walking tour." Well, so I thought that it really was Joan who had started pub walks. And it turns out now I find out that the very first London walks ever were, in fact, pub walks. And they were started by, yes, Keith himself. The great thing about the Joan story is that she would actually take over the pub. She was brassy, you know, bold, and she would get up on a table, not as a table dancer. Table dancing was still, you know, 30 years in the future or something like that. But she would address the whole crowd, not just her walkers, but the whole pub. She was just as bold as could be. She could take it over, and it must have been quite a phenomenon at the time. Anyway, I've had to adjust my thinking now a little bit. It wasn't Joan who started pub walks. It was Keith, and the very first London walks were, in fact, pub walks. But thinking about Joan, that really led me on to think about June and Jean. Wonderful, wonderful guides. Both died some years ago. June was a stockbroker in the City of London and then became a guide. She was gap-toothed. She was bawdy. She was full of life and energy. She was a kind of 20th century version of the Wife of Bath. And she was one of those guides. We've got a couple of them on the team at the moment. She would develop a following. She normally did about 5 walks a week. And when people discovered her, they would just go on her next walk and then the one after that and the one after that. She was that good. I can remember she had a daughter named Lindsay. Lindsay was about 8 or 9 when I joined London Walks. And Lindsay would go on the walks, and she'd been on them many times. And, you know, she had that mind of a 9-year-old. And sometimes June would leave something out, and Lindsay would remind her, "Mummy, Mummy, you forgot to tell them about." And that was always fun. June was one of the, we've had about 5 or 6 rave reviews from the New York Times, and June got the second one, and it really was a wonderful, wonderful review, but we didn't have a lot of luck with that. We had some competition that got started not too long after I joined. And one of these characters was, well, frankly, was a scoundrel. He was always willing to take people on the walking tour when there were 25 or 30 people there, and he was going to make some good money. But if there were only 8 or 10, he couldn't be arsed, frankly. He just wasn't going to do it. And we discovered that what he was doing was turning up and, you know, eyeing the crowd up, whether it was worth his while or not. And if it wasn't a good-sized group, he would go up to them and say, "Are you here for the walking tour?" And they'd say, "Yes." And he'd say, "Oh, well, you know, I think you just missed it. They went just a minute and a half ago. They went in that direction." And he'd send them off on a wild goose chase. And you know, for a long time, we couldn't figure out why he was doing this. I mean, apart from the fact that it was a contemptible thing to do. But if you'd gone to the trouble of going in there, give them the walking tour. Because it's the right thing to do, but because you've also traveled into London. And we realized that he was doing this because he was worried that perhaps there were going to be complaints made to, in those days, it was travel books like Fodor's and Frommer's and Let's Go, this walk had been advertised and they weren't reliable and so on and so forth. So it was a way of displacing all of that. The people felt guilty. Oh, we must have got there a little bit late or something like that. So that was what was going on. But the point was, and I can't remember the name of his company, but it had the word street in it. And June, our guide, her surname was Street. So June Street. Well, the New York Times did this rave review of June Street. And then in a sidebar, it listed the then four or five London walking tour companies. And the topmost one that it listed was this character. I think it was called London Streets, something like that. And in the mind of the readers, some of them, they just got a bit confused. And they thought, oh, well, this is the company that's got this wonderful guide that the New York Times has just raved about. So, she didn't get didn't get much in the way of a boost from that wonderful, wonderful review. And this scoundrel who's now, he left 20 years ago, he stopped 25 years ago. He benefited enormously from that wonderful review of June Street. June died in Bali. She was cremated on a beach in Bali. And when we found out about that, we all said, well, of course, absolutely. That's June. She would go out in a blaze like that. Quite spectacular. Way of ending it all, being cremated on a beach in Bali. And then the third J is Jean. Jean, some of you will probably remember Jean. She was a through and through Londoner, a Cockney. She married Harvey, who took her up to Hertfordshire, to Harpenden, and for the rest of her life, she ruefully said, I sold my birthright for a mess of pottage. She loved London, she missed London, and everything about her was just wonderful. She was so generous as a guide. She would try everything. The generosity, this perhaps bears exploring a little bit. Some guides can be extremely proprietorial about the fruit of their labor, the fruit of their research. They're worried that someone's going to nick it, even a colleague. Jean wasn't that way. She was just so generous. She would always be willing to share and would always plunge in, take on anything that needed covering at short notice. She was tiny. She would do things in costume. She would do Dickens walks, and it was like having Miss Flight, a Dickens character, guide you. She would do a Cockney London walk in the pearly costume. She had a Pearly's costume. Absolutely wonderful. She suddenly was felled. I mean, she guided one Friday. She was fine. And a matter of just a few days later, she was desperately ill and dying. She was going to do a West Hampstead walk. She'd lived this way when she was very young, and we'd never had a West Hampstead walk, and she wasn't going to be able to do it. And Mary and I live in West Hampstead. Mary took it on, and I can remember going to visit Jean in hospital. She was on her deathbed. She knew she was going to die. And I said to her, that West Hampstead walk, please don't worry thing about that, Jean. That's going to be all right. Mary's going to do that. And bright as a button, bright as a button. This is a woman who probably had 120 hours to live. She said, I know, I'll be there. And by that, she meant the cemetery. She was going to, she's buried in this big West Hampstead cemetery that Mary takes people into on that walking tour. A very, very brave lady. Really, my final memory is at the graveside, and Jean's 9-year-old granddaughter sobbing her eyes out, inconsolable. Okay, that's it for today. Good night from London.